Welcome to the Maximus Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Cam Sapa. As a clinical psychologist, medical school professor, and CEO, I specialize in helping men be better in mind, body, and masculinity. On this podcast, I interview extraordinary men as a clinician would, hearing their come-up stories of how they became the men that they are today, and having them share their secrets of actionable advice on how to look, feel, and perform your best. I love the transition a little bit since we're talking about metabolic health and hacking, and talk a little bit about actionable advice, if you will. So it's funny because I feel like there's a bunch of like health tech CEOs, like you, me, Mateo who runs 8 Sleep, Justin who runs Kettle and Fire, Dave who runs Bulletproof, and I think probably the number one question we're all asked is like, what's your routine? Because you guys are kind of like, you know, the purveyors or experts in the space, and people want to know like what's sort of the cutting edge best practice. And I certainly look to you both as like a role model, but also a real expert in this space in terms of, you know, enhancing health and biohacking. In fact, I believe you were featured on a Netflix documentary.
Yeah.
I know it's always a work in progress, and I know that especially folks like you and I experiment with a lot of stuff that may not be accessible or necessarily recommended to the masses. But I'd love if you could kind of share, like break down your current health behavior routine. Like what are you doing in terms of diet and exercise? And then we can get into the supplements and all the other fun stuff too.
Yeah. And I think this is super important because I feel like there are also a lot of these self-proclaimed biohackers that are just not very fit. Mm-hmm. Like I'm sure you've seen some people that talk about like changing healthcare, and they're just like, they legit like don't look healthy.
That's true.
And I'm just like, come on, like you're talking about like the future of healthcare and future of medicine and future of biohacking. And you're like, hey, you look like not very healthy. Like you look like you couldn't even like finish like a 5-mile run or whatever, like, you know, baseline athletic accomplishment.
Totally. I had a tweet about this and I was like, you know, in terms of picking what guru to follow, you should follow these steps. And step number one was like, would you trust them to spot you on the bench if you're going for a PR and save your life? Because I was like, you know, if they're not fit, you know, I don't know what kind of role model they are.
Yeah, because I think it's like there's only two options. Either they don't follow their own advice or their stuff doesn't work. Right. So I think it's like, it's actually very incumbent for folks like you and me to not just talk the talk, but actually walk the walk. I think that's like an integrity thing. Mm-hmm. So going to specifics. I think there's like, just going back to the basics. I mean, there's like three main pillars, like nutrition, sleep, exercise. Mm-hmm. And I think most things can be done very, very efficiently and cheaply. If you just think about like, just getting the basics right across those three dimensions. Mm-hmm. I'll start with nutrition. I think very, very baseline, just cutting out refined sugar, refined carbohydrate intake is just like such an easy recommendation. I think cutting out ethanol, cutting out alcohol is like a very, very reasonable thing to do from a health perspective as well as a performance perspective. I think it's a very, very maybe challenging for some because it's like a very core part of socialization. Totally. But I think for me, it's just like, especially now being in Miami, there's so many tech events, things are just like going, like pandemic does not exist there. Mm-hmm. And I think when people ask like, oh, like, isn't it like hard? It's like, hey, just have a freaking soda water with a lime or a Diet Coke with a little lemon. No one cares. Right? Like I'm having a good time. I don't need to be buzzed to like have a good time. So I think cutting out sugar, cutting out ethanol, very, very low hanging fruit from those two perspectives.
I'm glad, by the way, you mentioned the ethanol because most people don't do that, right? And the people always push this, glass, like wine is always healthy for you. And I actually talk about the research literature on Twitter. I was like, there's actually no amount of alcohol that's safe. It's very clear. Ethanol is a carcinogen. Literally, we know that because it causes cancer of the mouth, throat, esophagus, and stomach. Literally anything that it gets in contact with, it's a solvent, particularly if you're consuming high proof liquor, right? It literally burns on the way down. Yep. That's your body telling you this shit ain't good for you. So I'm not against alcohol. You can obviously consume it socially and there's sort of positive pro-social benefits, but we shouldn't sort of delude ourselves that it's actually healthy. And even the wine stuff, they've shown that in fact, non-alcoholic grape juice has the same
Yeah, benefits. Exactly. So I think it's fun. I get it. Like, I'm sure I had some drinks in college and when I was younger, I'm sure everyone, you know, like, look, I'm down to like, if I'm at your wedding or I'm at your, you know, big party to throw in, I'm going to have some champagne with you. But I don't casual drink anymore, right? Like, it's, I feel like there's like actually a pretty bad culture around like happy hour, which I don't think happened over the pandemic, but I'm sure we're going to go back into it where it's like, oh, you know, it's 5 o'clock Friday. Like, we're not even hungry, but like, go eat some like fried chicken and a beer. Mm-hmm. And no one's even hungry, but like that's what we do as a culture. So I think just being a little bit disciplined about it. I don't think it needs to be like, hey, I'm lecturing you about like what you do with your body. Like, you choose your own adventure. But like, for me, like, very, very easy baselines. Like, no one's judge. Like, what I find, no one judges you if you just like are having a soda water with a lime. No one cares. No one's tracking. Everyone's just trying to like have a good time. And mm-hmm. I think good from a socialization perspective that you can have a good time without having like a chemical in your brain. Absolutely. And then I think from that perspective, I think, you know, from a nutrition perspective, I think, you know, stepping into a little bit of a controversy, I think a lot of the plant-based stuff is very, very propagandized in terms of like the arguments of its superiority of having some meat in your diet or animal protein in your diet, you know? So I think just me personally, I'm very animal product forward. Am I like perma ketogenic diet? No, not necessarily. I see macronutrient ratios as something I balance out with my exercise load, mm-hmm. meaning that if I am low exercise load, I will be closer to zero carb. If I'm doing more exercise, I give myself more leeway because I will be, you know, metabolizing, burning through that exogenous carbohydrate anyways. Right. So I try to be less prescriptive, less dogmatic, because I think as you understand how the rules of metabolism really work, they're kind of all like two sides of the same coin, right? Exercise and like ketogenic diet and fasting are like different levers attacking the same metabolic pathways. Mm-hmm. So
this is such a great point that I just want to emphasize here. Like, people always are looking for the magical macro ratio when it really depends on you, your activity and your goals, right? Like, carbohydrates should be, I always say this too, used as a lever based on your activity levels. In fact, yep. JT, we had in this podcast earlier, you know, he's actually measured, like, he can consume like 100 grams of carbs a day, which is not traditional sort of ketogenic levels, and still be in ketosis because of yep. the amount of physical activity he's doing. And a lot of, especially like professional athletes, given the amount that they're doing, they need to consume more carbohydrates. Same thing with fat. You can use fat as a lever too. If you're trying to lose weight, you should probably cut down a little bit. If you're trying to bulk, you can obviously have a little bit more. So that's why I think that's where the personalization really matters.
100%. So I think that's where I've been much less focused on the dogma. I feel like that's where like a lot of these health gurus go wrong. It's like, oh, you can only have 20 grams of carbs a day. And it's like, says who? It's like, I'm very different from someone who's 60 that's, you know, a little bit overweight, that's pre-diabetic, right? Like, we all have different goals. And the Olympic athlete who's like 24, gonna go compete in the next month, is gonna eat very differently than me. So I think there needs to be some nuance and thoughtfulness around constructing some of these nutritional protocols. I think of a lot of our professional athlete partners and friends, right? They're very, very strategic. They're very thoughtful in the cycling of their diet against their exercise load, right? So that will be the future. But again, just going to the baseline principles, minimize refined sugar, minimize ethanol. I would say that like a lot of propaganda pushing plant-based diets, I think that's great if you believe it from a moral, ethical perspective, or, you know, personal choice, but from a physiology, personal health perspective, no evidence there, if not negative evidence. And right. in terms of superiority over having some animal product in your diet. I think from a, like, you know, I think about it from macro and then time restriction perspective. Again, I think about if I'm going to have a little bit more carbs, I'm going to have a tighter eating window. So I typically like to do pretty tight eating windows. Mm-hmm. So like, I actually haven't had a meal so far today, and it's 12:42 p.m. Pacific time. So usually eat something, I'll break fast 1 p.m., maybe have my last meal 7, 8, you know, finish eating by 7, 8. So 6, 7 hour eating window, 16, 17 hour fasting window.
Mm-hmm. And do you do but that every day?
Yeah, usually every day. And then I'll vary it if I'm like just increasing my like exercise volume, I'll eat more, right? Like I think it's just, you gotta maintain energy balance. But yeah, I don't know, fortunately or unfortunately, just been working a lot. So like having less time to exercise as much. So,
and then when you do exercise, are you doing it before or after the eating windows?
I like doing it. Well, it depends on like, I like doing it right before eating.
Okay.
So basically just like fully stress and load the, my metabolism and then replenish and rebuild right after the workout.
That makes sense.
Yep. So that's like kind of like the broad philosophy of broad strokes around nutrition. Yeah, I mean, on the edge, obviously we have HVMN products that I think are like very well, like very reasonable for certain use cases in terms of snacks or collagen or MCT. Sleep side. Yeah, I think, you know, like one bad thing about Miami is that's too loud. I don't sleep that well out there, too much stuff going on. So yeah, I mean, I think just actually prioritizing sleep, no brainer. And then exercise. I think it's like if you just sit all day long, that is your exercise. I mean, like a lack of exercise is essentially just training your to be, you know, not non-mobile. Mm-hmm. So I think one thing that I've picked up, especially being close with Jake Paul's camp as he's going to a boxing fight, is that he spends so much time stretching and working on flexibility, and improving that range of motion. So that's something that I've been incorporating and in being more thoughtful of. I definitely, you know, over the years, started prioritizing more body weight exercises, free weight exercises, Olympic power lifts versus like machines versus classes. Mm-hmm. But I think just in terms of broad brush strokes, just like stand, right? Like I'm standing right now, a standing desk. I think just like try to integrate more active movement into your day. Mm-hmm. Yes, we're like no longer hunter gatherers. A lot of us are chained to our desk or devices to make a life, to make a livelihood. I get it. So that's why I like having like little kettlebells around my desk, try to have a standing desk. Yeah, like I'm not like perfect. I'm not like always like working out every single moment, but just make it easy. Just make it super as easy as possible for you. Don't have to be a super disciplined person to try to incorporate some movement into your day.
Totally. Yeah. And I feel like you're underselling yourself because I know you can do a muscle up and I bet 99% of founders cannot. So I feel like that's a good benchmark for whether you should invest in someone who's practicing what they're preaching. So, yeah. So I think that's absolutely great. So we talked about nutrition. We talked about exercise, obviously talked a little bit about sleep. I'd love if you can share a little bit about like, you know, drugs or supplements that you're taking and what you found, what are the effects that you found, and what it's been really helpful that maybe other people can learn from.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's like one of, you know, going back to like the Maximus mission, I think, you know, what you're working on, what Maximus is working on, is going to be super critical, right? Like, testosterone, clearly one of the most critical, biomarkers for men, but just in, for people, right? It's not just like a men only thing. Sure. And really, really dialing in this, democratizing access, democratizing the understanding of this, I think something I'm super, super interested in and hope to be dialing in and working with you and your team to just really fully understand and master. But yeah, broadly, like, one of the core reasons why I started HVMN was to like make products I wanted to eat. So whether that's like having a food bar that's rock solid on your glycemic response. I mean, we built a ketogenic food bar that is like, you know, when you actually wear a CGM, flat in terms of your blood sugar response, or having, you know, exogenous ketones where I can induce ketosis really, really rapidly and have this lever or tool to spike ketones and ingest ketones really, really quickly. Mm-hmm. These are the types of things that from an HVMN perspective that we're very, very thoughtful about, like, how do we incorporate like nutritional tools that make sense from a metabolic health perspective? And then from a nootropics perspective, obviously, like, we have constructed and built stacks that we think are very important for different aspects of cognitive health, whether that's ranging from yawn, which is, you know, our sleep aid, towards our daily nootropic like Rise or Kato. Yeah, it's always like very humbling when you just like meet people and they're like, oh yeah, like, you know, my friend, or like, I met like the family office of a super, super like famous investor, and they're like, yeah, like, they literally order yawn to all of their different houses, and like, they're like, they have a huge customer. Like, oh wow, it's super humbling, super cool. So yeah, we're just here to help people, right? Like, I'm trying to help myself, and if I can help other people, like, great.
Yeah, I'd love to hear a little bit about like how you or other people potentially use these products. Because, like, for instance, I've tried your bars. I think they're phenomenal. Yeah. And whoever did your formulation did a great job, because most of these things taste like cardboard. So yeah. Even if they're healthy. But collagen protein is not a complete protein, right? So, right. Which is not bad. Obviously, has other benefits, given it's a different type of protein. So how should people use like a snack bar and fit that into their sort of nutrition plan holistically?
Yeah. So yeah, all credit to our VP product, Chrissy, for making the product possible. Yeah, I think she's like a very, very serious home chef, plus like has a formal chemical engineering background from Stanford MIT. So just like really just taking like whole food ingredients, making a product that actually was like macro nutriently, you know, the ideal ratio in terms of what you want from a ketogenic perspective. Yeah. So I think for keto food bar, like, anytime, we want to replace like a Snickers bar or like a Clif bar. Like, anytime you want like a light meal replacement or a quick snack, I think keto food bar is awesome there. I think our mission from the collagen perspective was really balancing out the methionine glycine ratio. So, one of the interesting critiques of having heavy animal product is a relatively high load of methionine. Right. But if you actually look at an ancestrally complete diet, there's a lot of glycine within collagen, which seems to be much more of a ancestrally consistent way of eating, right? You're not just eating muscle meat all the time. You're eating organ meats, you're eating skin, you're eating the connective tissue, which has a lot of collagen in it. So kind of the original thought and mission behind our collagen product was to, optimize for an easy way to increase, you know, glycine, just general collagen content. Cause a lot of us are not eating organ meats or skin or these things that are naturally high in collagen. So I think it's like a great additive to like a morning coffee, or like a lot of people use it as like part of their smoothie shake. I think a lot of people have like, you know, their acai and whatever. People like, there's like definitely like kind of the morning shake culture. And I think our product is a nice additive or scoop into that kind of their breakfast or their daily shake. And then from a supplementation perspective, I think these are like great dailies in terms of adding and mixing within your existing protocols.
This is a really, really great point. I'm glad you sort of emphasize it, because I think it's something that's missed in the whole sort of animal-based debate, which I'm also an advocate of. Clearly, if you look at anthropologically, hunter-gatherers across the world, across all different cultures, we are primarily meat eaters. I think the evidence is sort of resounding, quite frankly, towards that. And it is really sort of the ancestral diet. So even though we said, you know, macros can be individualized, I really do think there actually is a universal human diet. And quite frankly, it's animal based. I even don't really particularly find the moral ethical parts confusing, because we actually kill more animals farming than we do. But where do you think all the mice that like go into cornfields go? They get like poisoned and eradicated.
Chopped up. Yep.
So I actually argue, if you're an animal rights advocate, eating carnivore, ironically, is the most ethical thing you can do. But the point is, yeah, if you look at also ancestral giants, they're eating the whole animal. And I've tried to do this, like eat like heart, liver, tongue, all this thing. It's really hard to do on a day-to-day basis, hard to get this stuff. Doesn't always taste great. Like, maybe I didn't grow up with enough liver, but it's not the most palatable thing for me.
Yeah.
So as a result of that, I'm like, okay, I am primarily going to eat muscle meat just out of convenience. And taste. And so I do supplement collagen and glycine for that reason, because you know, as you were alluding to, there's like different amino acids that make up protein, and the balance of those is important. And we are sort of deficient. In fact, there was a research study that estimated that we're almost like 10 grams a day deficient in glycine. And glycine is actually very important for sleep. So it's a great actually pre-sleep supplement. There's good research that comes out of Japan and a lot of other places about 3 grams prior to sleep enhances sleep quality. So even if you don't have trouble falling asleep, it may enhance the quality of your sleep. And I believe that is an
ingredient. That's in yawn. I mean that 100%, like, I think we read the same literature and interpreted the same way. I think that's why, you know, when we construct the yawn, our sleep aid, you know, glycine is a major component of that stack.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you mentioned the you know, the MCT and the ketones, like how do people use those typically? What's the best use case for you?
Yeah. So I think from an MCT perspective, what are MCTs, medium chain triglycerides, oftentimes found in coconut, but one of the most ketogenic versions of MCTs is an 8-carbon-length fatty acid, which is C8 caprylic acid. It's like a very, it's like the progenitor of like exogenous ketones, like eating ketones directly. Fortunately, they taste much better than a lot of these ketone molecules. Yeah,
they're not,
so
not tasty at all.
I think of them as like just really great coffee creamers or like mixers into people are using them to bake or make smoothies with. And then with ketones, exogenous ketones, ketone esters, that's something that we're like heavily R&Ding. We've been out of stock for like 18 months now, really trying to bring it down in cost and availability. Right? Because our first version of ketones was like super high end. We have like a $6 million contract with Special Operations Command selling these things at like $30 a dose. Mm-hmm. Super, super like fun to tap into that community. But I think it just is not the impact that it needs to be if this is something that will really truly be a fourth macronutrient. So stay tuned on that front.
Awesome. We look forward to that. Is there anything kind of on the bleeding edge that you're willing to talk about, like you do, that's maybe beyond the standard diet, exercise, sleep stuff that may be interesting for our more biohacking oriented listeners?
In some sense, I've almost just stuck to the basics after going on like a crazy journey. You know, like I think like both you and me, like we saw the CGM stuff like really, really early, right? Like yep. There's like CGMs are like some of the most popular like biohacking tools. You know, our friends at Lovells popularizing it. And I think we were playing it like 5 years ago, right? Like these sleep trackers and, you know, Oura, Whoops, like they're now like very, very big companies. Like we were some of the earliest users in all of this stuff.
Do you still use any of those and do you still find value? Or at this point, you've kind of learned everything that you need to learn and you're good.
I like, I mean, I think so for something like CGM or Lovells, I think doing some experiments every now and then is always like kind of helpful. And I think just having a quantitative reminder is not a bad thing, yeah. Right? Just giving a kick in the butt, like, okay, just like, let's just make sure and do it like a annual check-in, just make sure that like everything is scoring out properly. I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing.
Totally.
I kind of like wearing an Oura ring just from a fashion perspective. It just kind of looks cool.
Yeah, sure. By the way, have you learned anything from a CGM that surprised you and you couldn't predict from like knowing macros or the glycemic index of a food?
HVMN bars are badass. I mean, that's probably it. I think just originally, like this is like 4 or 5 years ago. I remember just like, this is like, just, you know, like I remember like I was going to go to Europe, had a layover in Boston, flying from San Francisco. I like gave in, wanted to eat like a Coke and a double Whopper and fries.
Yeah.
And then like my blood sugar went like literally above 300 milligrams per deciliter, which is like insane. I'm like, oh wow. Like this is nuts. Cause like, I think combination of sleep deprivation plus just like massive sugar bomb plus all, you know? So I think that was just like, I think those lessons are like very important, right? Like we all theoretically know that like drinking like full sugar soda is probably not good, but just seeing it in your own metabolism.
Yeah.
I think it's very, very like worth that lesson, right? It's like worth having an oral glucose tolerance test just to see like, oh, like I'm not some special snowflake that's immune to like sugar response. Like, yes, like my metabolism like matches literature.
Totally. Yeah. It's, and I think people don't realize it because it's they're manufactured in ways that it's almost like it deceives you how much sugar or calories you're getting. I remember sitting next to this construction worker who was drinking a bottle of Coke, and I hadn't had a Coke in a long time. Yeah. And I think like on the bottle, I was literally looking at the label while I was chatting with him, and it was like something like 65, 68 grams of sugar. And I was just like, Jesus Christ, because my point of reference is occasionally I have a teaspoon of honey right before a workout if I want to get some quick, you know, sugar that I'm going to obviously quickly burn in the workout. That's like 7 grams of sugar. I was like, I can't imagine consuming 10 spoonfuls of honey like all at once. They would actually like probably make me sick, but I could easily down a bottle of Coke and enjoy it. And it's like, you know, it hits you so quick that you don't even realize it. And maybe that's why you need either a CGM or OGTT or oral glucose tolerance test to realize the impact some of these things are having.
Yeah. But I mean, I think like some things that I wish I had a little bit more access to is that like, I like the data. I like the subjective feel. I like the clinical kind of results, or at least in-field results, with elite athletes and some of the military folks around like saunas. I think the data is like pretty promising there. So I think like some of these, like, I guess like maybe where I like, I want almost maybe to pose it in a different way. Like, okay. I'm very skeptical about metformin and rapamycin.
Oh, tell us like, about that. Cause it's been a hot thing in the anti-aging longevity community.
Yeah. So I think like there's certain like very influential doctors who are like pumping metformin and rapamycin. And why I like fasting, ketogenic diet, maybe like saunas, is that like every single drug is dirty in the sense that like it is like metformin is a dirty drug. Rapamycin is a dirty drug, right? Like metformin is a mitochondria disruptor, and it literally makes your mitochondria less efficient. So AMPK gets triggered. Rapamycin like shuts down mTOR and like across your entire body. Mm-hmm. And, you know, mTOR is like the signal to rebuild muscle. Mm-hmm. And do you want, and I think a lot of these folks just discount like the tissue specificity of where you really want these things to hit. You oftentimes want mTOR to be activated if you're exercising. Like you want like your muscles to rebuild. For metformin, do you really want to blanket like just shut down all of your like AMPK sensors, like, and like disrupt your mitochondria? Like, can you just do fasting, which is like a much more ancestrally consistent way to trigger AMPK, or you fasting or a ketogenic diet to trigger mTOR? So I think when people are just like offering these like magic exogenous pills that have not had like an ancestral consistency of like tried and true over thousands of years, I'm just like pretty skeptical given like the unknown side effects or dirty targeting of these molecules.
Yeah, that's why I think, you know, drugs in particular, drugs and supplements, I should say, you really have to consider on an individual basis, because the toxicity and benefits are so different. I think the unfortunate thing is people lump them all together and they're like, oh, I won't touch any pharmaceutical drug. And I'm like, well, that's silly. You know, there's some that are incredibly safe. You cannot overdose on them. There's no addiction potential, et cetera. And then there's ones that clearly are. They're like incredibly dangerous. There's very low toxicity threshold, et cetera. Potentially have more side effects. So that's why I think I really like that you do your research and like you're aware of this. You know, I became familiar with metformin because I spent a lot of my career doing diabetes work, and I remember talking to one of the top diabetesologists in the country. And metformin is pretty standard, like almost first line treatment. If you have type 2 diabetes, it's the most commonly prescribed drug. It's dirt cheap. It does work really well in reducing your blood sugar levels.
Yeah.
She used to joke. She's like, you know, I see thousands of patients. It just makes people nauseous. And so no wonder they eat less and lose weight. So I was like, well, that's one way of getting people to do it, but I'm not sure it's a great, mechanism of action there.
Yeah.
And even people who are like, oh, I only like natural things, like berberine is pushed as a natural sort of supplement alternative to metformin. Yeah. And yes, it also reduces your blood sugar levels, but it also reduces your testosterone. So you have to kind of be, you know, knowledgeable or like do your research when you're doing this stuff. Obviously, there are some great supplements and drugs that do wonders, and it's worth the cost benefit. But I think you have to be aware of the cost benefit when you make those decisions, and obviously work with your prescribing provider. We're not providing medical advice here. you know, and making informed decisions for you and your health.
Yeah, 100%. So in some sense, like, I think we should all, I think the main meta point is like, we all have to have some responsibility of agency of our own health and performance. I think the paradigm is shifting where it used to be that there was like this doctor who was like all knowing, and it was very hard to have like a collegial relationship with your primary care practitioner. I think the world is turning towards decentralization, and having, and therefore like the incentive models are also that like your primary care practitioner probably spends what 15 minutes with you for a year. Like you just like intuitively have much more context of your health, your goals, where you want to be than any outsourced person. And it's not because like the doctor like doesn't care about you. It's like, hey, like they just have like, they're overworked. They got like insurance payer provider issues to like pay off their medical school debt. They just can't like think about optimizing you.
Yeah.
So I think the meta point is it is worth a little bit of our time to understand and research and figure out like what we want to get out of this short life that we have, and feel a bit of agency and power to educate ourselves and, you know, work with platforms like Maximus or other providers to be like, hey, like this is something that I'm curious might be helpful for me. Get educated, like take a little bit more agency and responsibility.
Right. Yeah. I think it's such a great point, by the way, you bring up about managed care, because I come from that world, right? As a licensed clinical healthcare provider, you worked in academic medical centers, VA hospitals, et cetera. It's a totally different world. We really have a sick care system, not a healthcare system, yeah. Right? Like when I would work with diabetes patients, their A1C levels would be double digits. They'd have severe complications. And that's the only point in which they get to see a psychologist is basically like, I had patients that already had an amputation, right? And it was tragic because I was like, why can't I work with this guy 10 years ago? Why? Because our sick care system does not pay for a psychologist to talk to a healthy or maybe steadily declining person. It's like, oh, they got to be really sick. Yeah. I was like, well, I can't get their leg back, you know, at this point. My main goal was to save their other leg, which is terrible. Yeah. And that's why, you know, with Omada, we're like, oh, let's focus on pre-diabetes. Let's focus on before they have diabetes to prevent this bad thing of happening. So that was almost, that's called a sort of secondary prevention. You stop or slow early stage disease. I think the newest paradigm is really prevention and performance optimization, right? With companies like yours and mine and sort of these kind of emerging practices, it's like, well, let's take people, you know, whether or not they have an issue, and how can we optimize or enhance their functioning, you know, above and beyond just like preventing sickness. Because I think that's the thing that people miss out on. The absence of illness is not the presence of health, right? You could technically be metabolically healthy, but you're kind of like out of shape, low energy, you're not performing highly. Versus like, that's why I love the athletic community, is regardless of whether or not you want to be in the Olympics, they're like, they don't care about just like preventing disease, they want to perform, right? And yep. I think whether or not you're in that realm, I think most of us, to your point, like you're talking about growing up, we're in a hyper-competitive society. And even if you don't want to be, you know, Bill Gates or Elon Musk, you probably want to look, feel, and perform your best. And I'm really glad that there's this true healthcare like system that's emerging more on the consumer side, obviously outside of managed care, because they're not going to pay for anything they don't want to, yep. where people are, you know, using their hard-earned dollars to spend it in a way that really optimizes their functioning. And I really believe, obviously, you know, that's the future of things. And to your point, in terms of like the cost benefit, I think being able to have this closed loop diagnostic and therapeutic where, sure, you'll prescribe a drug, but you'll measure the effects and you know it's working versus just believing it does, or you have no like idea with a lot of like supplements, is it actually working? Unless it has a tangible effect, obviously, on your sleep or whatnot. I think the future is you're going to titrate it, you're going to adjust it, and you're going to keep taking it if it's working for you. And you'll have the data, whether subjective or objective, to be able to prove that.
Yeah. And I think it's also a cultural point, right? Because I think there's half the culture is like, oh, you are perfect the way you are, right? And it's just like, and I don't want to say that like people are better or worse for whatever physical, physiological, mental state anyone is, but I think it is okay for society to say, hey, there are role models and ideals that we should aspire to. I think that's like a stronger, more focused society, a stronger culture. And I think that like giving into saying, oh, you're absolutely perfect the way you are, just to like save a little bit of ego for everyone, I don't think does a service to anyone. I think it's a disservice of low expectations. So I think just even going back to the point, like, oh, is it okay? Like, not like, is it okay to be competitive and aspire to compete with like some of the, you know, Olympic gold medalists or billionaire or, you know, number one entertainer? I think it's okay to just say, hey, like, we all have different goals and we should be encouraged to pursue them, not to say, hey, you're okay being mediocre. Yeah. It's not to say that we judge people and say, oh, you are inferior, let's treat you like shit because you're like not the best in the world at something. But I think it's okay to say, hey, like, let's encourage people to actually try.
Yeah. And also, like, to be the best that you can be, right? Even let's remove all the external competition. Yeah. Everyone has their own, you know, genetic potential, baseline, et cetera. And I think 95% of people are nowhere near it, fact, right? So, you know, even if you want to just like be the best that you can be, there's so much I think we can do. To your point, like 80% of people are metabolically unhealthy. So if we just even address that, that would be a huge win for most people. And the acceptance piece is obviously near and dear to my heart as a psychologist, right? So I very much do encourage self-acceptance, self-love, self-compassion. This is something I even actively work on. I work with a bunch of tech CEOs and this is the stuff that we talk about, right? But this is not mutually exclusive with wanting to be better, right? There's a difference between like I as a human being, I as a person, I'm a person of worth, right? And nothing can take that away from me. It's not what's in my pocketbook or not which, you know, where I stand in society. And I can feel that great degree of compassion for myself and at the same time want to improve and constantly improve. And I'm a great example of that. I'm very satisfied with my life. I'm very fortunate that I'm very happy right now. And I'm constantly on an everyday basis tweaking things because I want to just perform better. But that's not me. Like my performance is an output, right? That's something I'm always changing and tweaking. But that doesn't determine my self-worth if I have a good day or a bad day. That's still rock solid. So that's the thing I want to like encourage to folks is like, these are not, it's not a trade-off. You can love and accept yourself. Absolutely. And you should. And it's a practice very much that I encourage. And at the same time, in terms of your behaviors and what you're doing, you can always be better. And that's not you. That's just like the extension or output. And that's what I think actually helps people when, you know, people feel very frustrated and they get down on themselves when they fail, right? Because they take it personally. I am a failure. Right. And when you take it like that, obviously it's very depressing versus I didn't fail. My approach failed. What did I do wrong? What was wrong with my process? What was wrong with the timing? What was wrong with my execution? And let's go fix those things and constantly improve those things on a day-to-day basis. But it's not a necessary reflection of me as a human being.
100%.
Speaking of which, one last thing I want to talk about, as you were kind of alluding to, you know, the stresses of being a doctor. There's a lot of stresses to being an entrepreneur. And you know, you have a very impressive, you know, balance between, you know, you're running your company, which is doing well. You've started a rolling investment fund with Jake Paul. So you're now doing a lot of investing. And at least from my sneak peeks on your Instagram, you seem like you have a kind of a fun life as well. How do you manage stress and how do you find work-life balance? And maybe that can be an interesting lesson for other people listening.
I think work-life balance is, again, I don't think this is like a new debate talking about work-life integration versus work-life balance. Mm-hmm. I think the way I think about it is how do you, my current model is create a work or a livelihood where it's like just legitimately fun. Mm. So like everything I do is like in terms of is trying to focus my craft, the ways I can generate a livelihood to things that I authentically think are fun. Mm. And that means being fortunate to find partners, people I work with that can offload and be collaborators with me on things that I think are quote unquote less fun, but might be something that like they're world-class in and they find enjoyment out of. And I think for a lot of us, there's we all have different like inclinations or combinations of things that we think are intellectually stimulating or fun. So in that sense, like, again, back to like the top of the conversation, like I think there's a world of abundance. I think it's a world of opportunity. And I think the hardest attribute to find are the good people to do business with, to collaborate and build long-term partnerships, relationships, businesses with. Mm-hmm. So I think in that sense, like where I spend a lot of my time now, just like finding, cultivating and building relationships with the good people. Mm-hmm. And like finding that tribe that's not necessarily, that is not based on origin, any single kind of non, like an attribute that you were born with. These are like attributes of who you choose to be. Mm-hmm. And I want to associate myself with people that align with my values in terms of self-improvement, ambition, curiosity, high integrity. So in that sense, I feel like just hitting like a sweet spot where like I've built enough infrastructure and relationships where it definitely has been just like a super wild ride over the last, 3 months, but also just the last year, where I think I've taken the most out of the lockdown and pandemic, which I know has been really challenging for a lot of people. But I've been very proactive in letting that time be a time to reset and be very thoughtful of rebuilding my processes, my infrastructure, and like my work style, right? Like you've had to re-underwrite how you do business and how you manage and how you work, right? Like I think for better or for worse, all of us had to. But instead of taking a passive mentality of being like, and this is unfortunate. I'm sure you have a lot of friends who literally just took the time to like drink every night or like watch and play video game. I mean, like not even kidding. Like you talk to people, they're like, yeah, I have friends who like literally gained 30 pounds because like they became depressed. And that's a shame. I, for whatever reason, was a little bit more resilient or a little bit more proactive. It's like, hey, I get to every single thing that I had commitments before is essentially deleted, mm-hmm. right? Like there's no standing meeting that I had to go to anymore. There's no like happy hour that I had to go to. Like those are all canceled. And I just started like rebuilding like what I thought was valuable mm-hmm. and I think because of the shakeup, like I've just seen like people are almost down to make new friends because like all their old patterns were done. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, like I think the ideal is there's no like real difference between work and life. I think it's just like, you have one life, you just have one set of time. Not is everything I do like amazingly fun? I mean, this is like a fun conversation. I would do this anyways. Is this work? Is this life? It's both. It's amazing, right? And I think it's like, how much of this can we, how do I maximize more of my time like this mm-hmm. versus like, oh man, I gotta like do some shit I really freaking hate. So that's the ideal goal, right? Don't think about it as like work brain, life brain, completely separate life. I don't think that's not how we work. Yeah. We just have one life.
I love it. That's a great philosophy. That's very aligned with work-life integration. And I love that you use the word fun. We've had a lot of guests on this podcast who are very, very successful people. And it's not something I hear enough, quite frankly. And I think fun and play, and we know this from the psychological literature as well, are just as important for adults as it is kids. I think, unfortunately, we lose that sense of perspective. Maybe what's fun is different for like a kid and an adult, but I think it's just as important.
Yeah. And I think like, to me, it's like, if you're so successful and smart and you're not having fun, like, did you figure it out? Like maybe like, you know what I mean? It's like you built so much infrastructure and assets, but you like, you're not having fun, man. I don't think you like figured it out. Like, I don't think you fully self-actualized. Mm-hmm. I think having a lightness and a funness is so important because I think when things get very, very serious, you're having a lot of employees, you're managing a lot of money and capital and you're a fiduciary. Yes, it is stressful, but I think part of getting to that position is like being in a position where you're having fun with it. And I think you perform better when you're having fun, because I think that's much closer to being in flow mm-hmm. as opposed to being stressed. So in some sense, it's not like I care for fun and just for the sake of having in like personal enjoyment. I think it's literally more effective.
Yeah, that's a good point. And maybe to your point, it's almost like the symptom or the outgrowth of a well-lived life, right? You know you're doing it right when you're having fun, and not that you're pursuing or chasing fun as the be-all and end-all, because obviously a hedonistic life is probably not going to set you up for for success. But it is important. And I, you know, I always tell people, I think you should take actually your work very seriously. It is something, you know, to be serious about, but don't take yourself so seriously. And that's the dichotomy. It was, in fact, that was my New Year's resolution one year. And I skated around my company on like a three-wheeled skateboard. And everyone thought I was like the intern. And I was like, great, they don't take me too seriously, even though I'm in a position of like leadership and responsibility. But absolutely the work that I did, I was like, this is going to be A+ effort. And so I'm glad that you can kind of be a role model to our listeners as well, in terms of showing that you can be super smart, super successful, doing a lot of things, but still have that fun, that joie de vivre, that joy of living. As well, it doesn't have to be a mechanical just grind.
Yeah, I think it's hard, and I think there's a lot of grind to it, right? Like, don't get me wrong, it's not like you luck box, and I think you can't back into it just by luck. And I think I've just seen it again and again. I'm sure like all the successful people that you talk to, there is a lot of hours grinding, a lot of luck, a lot of just like right place, right time. I think a lot of gratitude, but I think. In that sense, it's like you, like if you're so fortunate to be in a position where you have a little bit more purview, you should almost, you should like realize that, hey, you can have fun with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, on that note, I think it's a great time to wrap up. This is one of the best, I think, podcasts that we've recorded, and then we should get you obviously on in a future time when you launch new and exciting products you want to talk about. For everyone listening, if you want to check out Humans products, go to hvmn.com. And Jeff is also active on social media. You can find him at Jeffrey Wu on Twitter. And it's a privilege to have you as a friend, a colleague, and an investor. So thank you so much for finally making this happen. And I look forward to continuing the conversations in the near future.
Amazing. Thanks so much, Cam.